Trainer Talks and Tales acknowledges the traditional owners and custodians of the land in which we're recording this podcast, the Turrbal and Yugara people of Meanjin. We pay our respects to elders past and present and extend our respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today.
Trainer Talks and Tales love having an array of guests with a variety of opinions. However, the views of the individuals do not necessarily reflect the perspectives of the host facilities.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another week of Trainer Talks and Tales. You are joined by your co-hosts, Tess and Daisy. Hello, Daisy. Welcome to another episode. How are you going?
Hello. Thank you. I am going good. Thank you. We are excited for another episode to drop for you guys. I have had a very boring week, Tess. Nothing exciting to chat about on the podcast today, but I feel like your week has been a little bit more exciting because you did have your final day at work. So do you want to tell me all about that?
Yeah, it's a bit surreal, actually, to think that I'm all done for maybe almost a year, but it was a really lovely day. We had a lot of fun and my team just spoiled me with gifts and thoughtful presents and photos of the birds and a little book for my baby girl to read all about the birds and stuff. So yeah, I feel very, very lucky to have such a lovely team, and it was a really nice day. So on a bit of a cloud at the moment, it was a good way to end a busy and a hectic couple of months, but yeah, feeling really good.
Yeah, I feel like you've been trying to jam in lots of different training projects and finish up a few things over the last couple of months. So it's probably about time that you put your feet up and relax for a couple of weeks before you've got baby girl arriving.
Definitely. Absolutely.
Yes. Well, Tess, I think we should probably get straight into this episode because we do have a great one, and we are joined by not one, but two giraffe specialists. So Jimmy and Renee have joined us from Taronga Zoo, and we have been so excited to chat to them, and we talk all about some giraffe training and some really important conservation work that is happening as well. So we hope that you guys enjoy.
Let's get into it. Okay, well, first of all, thank you so much for joining us, Jimmy and Renee. It's awesome to have you guys on the podcast. But as you might have heard, we always start Trainer Talks and Tales with our Fast Five. Now, because there's two of you, we thought we'd split this up and do three questions each. So it's actually Fast Six, but anyway.
Like fun.
Let's start with you, Jimmy. Number one, Instagram or TikTok?
Yeah, oh my gosh. Instagram for me, TikTok for my dog. My dog's TikTok famous.
Favorite zoo you visited?
Oh, San Diego. I got the opportunity to work there and it was just amazing. So it's just not my favorite zoo. It's just an awesome environment as well.
Number three, bucket list species to see in the wild.
Carpi.
Nice.
Done.
All right.
Done.
Over to you, Renee. Favorite marine animal?
Oh, beluga whale.
Sweet or savory?
Sweet.
Number three, bucket list species to see in the wild.
Probably a carpi.
Your giraffe lovers are going to say a carpi.
I love it. Well done. All right. Well, it's so good to have you guys on the podcast. And if you might have heard before, we really like to delve a little bit into our guest careers and talk to them a little bit about their current role and how they got there. So, yep. Renee, do you want to start off with you and tell us a little bit more about what you're doing at the moment?
Yeah, sure. So I've always wanted to be a zookeeper ever since I was a kid. I applied for work experience in Year 10 at Taronga Zoo, but missed out, unfortunately. But luckily went in and did it in Year 11 and absolutely loved it. Then when I finished school, I was like really wanted to become a volunteer at the zoo. A lot of us become volunteers at the zoo. That's our way in. At that point in time, it was like a massive waiting list, like a three-year waiting list or something. And I put my name down. And in the meantime, I volunteered at a local animal park near where I grew up called Blue Gum Farm. It's no longer open, but I worked there for a bit. And because I was volunteering there, I actually got into the zookeeping certificate at TAFE. At that point in time, they were only taking like 30 people a year and you had to be in the industry. So being at Blue Gum Farm, I was able to get into that course. And then because I got into that course, my name was bumped up the list of the volunteers at Taronga Zoo. And so I was able to nab a spot on what was called the African section back then, and that was a primate and ungulate section. To be honest, I actually wanted to be a primate keeper at that point in time of my life. I soon changed my mind after working with the ungulates, which was basically where I started on the ungulate section. And fast forward 25 years, still there. But I, you know, after being a keeper, I advanced into being the supervisor of the ungulate unit for about 9 years. And then I...
It was a tough 9 years.
Yeah, I had to manage him for a little while. So I was supervisor of the ungulate team for about 9 years, but then I stepped down from that role when I started my family at home just to spend more time with my kids. And I'm on a, you know, flex work arrangement at the moment, which is really grateful for. And so I'm not quite full time yet. I'm 0.8 at the moment. Yeah. And loving it.
That's awesome. I can't believe you've been there for, did you say 25 years you've been working?
Yeah, 25 years this year.
I'm chasing her tail.
That's a huge achievement.
Oldies at the zoo.
No, that's so great. Like, yeah, literally. What an amazing achievement.
Are you guys even 25?
We could be their parents. Right?
Unfortunately, we are over 25. Yeah. But I haven't been working for 25 years, that's for sure. That's awesome to hear. Jimmy, do you want to maybe share the same sort of thing? We'd love to hear about your career pathway as well.
Yeah, so unlike Renee, I didn't know I always wanted to be a zookeeper. I didn't really know what I wanted to be. And so I always had animals in my background, but some of them are a little bit different. I was a butcher for a little bit, which some people don't really agree on, but whatever. I'm carnivore myself and I eat meat and whatever. And then I worked selling hides, leather hides. And then I got a job in a pet shop. I thought one of my friends in the leather shop said to me, I kept patting all the dogs that came in off the street. And he said, why don't you go and get a job in a pet shop? So I went and got a job in a pet shop and I thought, well, what's bigger and better than a pet shop? And fortunately for me, I met Renee back when I worked in the pet shop, and Renee worked upstairs in the chemist. And she used to come in her zoo volunteer uniform. And I happened to ask her, how do you become a volunteer? And she said, she gave me some bum steer. And then she went on her way.
Can I interrupt there?
Yeah. Go on, what do you want to interrupt her out? All right, she didn't give me a bum steer. She told me, you become a volunteer this way. And so I'm like, and then fast forward a few more years, I applied to be a volunteer and it didn't really happen. So I forgot about it. And then the zoo rang me and said, do you want to be a volunteer? So I started. And then I happened to be a zoo friend volunteer, which is a great opportunity in the zoo, but it's also not the direction I wanted to go in. Our zoo friends are amazing volunteers within Taronga Zoo, but they basically do a lot of the public interaction. So they're more, not so much with animals, they're more with the public, and they're handing out maps and they're doing guide spotting, and which was all fantastic start to my career. But I happened to bump into Renee and she's like, well, what are you doing? And I said, I'm being a zoo friend. She goes, well, that's not the direction you need to go. And so she pointed me into the zoo keeping career. So then fortunately I happened to do some volunteer keeping days and someone was sick. And back in the old days, and we're talking old days, you didn't have to have as much experience. They asked me if I wanted to do a couple of days on, I started in Circular Quay handing out maps. I was a young kid and I stand in Circular Quay and you had to do anything you could to become a zookeeper. So that was the start of my career. And then, yeah, meeting Ren and then getting invited to being involved in the giraffe program, which was, again, 22 years ago for me. And, I've been there ever since. And fortunately for me, I get to do heaps of cool stuff. Like, as Ren might have said, she's had children. So I got to do all the cool things she might have wanted to do. So I got to go to San Diego Zoo and do work experience in San Diego Zoo while she's busy having babies. And then I got to go and do some wild conservation work with giraffe. And so, I'm sure there's a bit of envy inside of Renee, a little bit, but, you know, she's got the beautiful babies that I don't have. So it is what it is, isn't it, Ren?
Yeah, I guess. Don't forget you worked at Dubbo for a very long time.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I did work at Western Plains Zoo as well for... about 7 years. But yeah, 7 years in the country, you tend to forget that, sorry. But yeah, I did work in Dubbo for 7 years, which, again, another amazing, working from an urban zoo to an open range zoo, two amazing experiences that you just can't compare. But, you know, I'm lucky I've had the best of both worlds.
Yeah, that's so interesting to hear. Well, I was actually going to say it's pretty impressive to hear from people that have started in, you know, at the very, not the bottom, but you started in as volunteers and you've been able to work your way through different roles within the facility and then work out to be 100%. Where you are now, which is, it's just amazing. And like you mentioned, Jimmy, it's a little bit different of how we're getting into the industry today. I think back in the day, we saw a lot of volunteer time, a lot of hard work, a lot of passion. And don't get me wrong, I don't think that we're not seeing that today, but I think the volunteer side of it is not maybe as prominent as it used to be when we were all volunteering. Like I remember
Daisy, you're saying the right things.
You're there all day, every day, like on your free time, you're staying after hours, you're doing everything you can to show that this is absolutely what you want to do, because it's amazing. I'm very blessed to do what we do.
100%.
Okay, well, let's maybe dive into the fact that you both obviously work with giraffes. You're obsessed with giraffes. It's so clear. Could you maybe one of you sort of introduce us briefly to the herd that you work with and some of their fun personalities?
Go for it,
Yeah, so at the moment we have four giraffes. Two of them are older individuals. Their names are Jimmy U and Zarafa. Jimmy U's 18 and Zarafa's 20. They came to us from our open range facility at Taronga Western Plains when they were 18 months old. And both of us have had the privilege of working with them. Jimmy was actually there the day Jimmy U was born.
I got to watch Jimmy U being born. So I worked in Dubbo before the transport to Sydney. So his name is sort of named after me, but not named after me. So his name in Swahili means firstborn, which means, firstborn. And he was the first giraffe I got to see being born. So my friends named him Jimmy U, which was a wonderful privilege. But then I moved zoos and I never thought I was going to have my namesake again, because it is a bit, what's the right word here? Narcissistic to name an animal after you, I think. So I didn't name him Jimmy after me. And then I moved to Sydney and who knows, he happened to move 18 months later.
So this makes a lot of sense, because we had one of the guest questions came through was, how does it feel to have a giraffe named after you? And I was like, I'm really confused. that must have been someone that works with
people. Realize you didn't name it after yourself.
Yeah.
Thanks for clearing up. That's good.
So those two animals, both Jimmy and I, have got a lot of rapport with. We've worked with them all their lives. So they're pretty chilled out and we have a lot of, I feel like, without sounding anthropomorphic, but there's a lot of trust between the two, between us and those animals, and I feel like they understand our training. I've only learnt my training through my experience on the job. I don't really call myself a professional animal trainer, but
me neither.
you know, they're the skills you pick up over the years, and also just knowing your animals and knowing what they like and what they're aversive to sort of just helps with the training that we've achieved over the years. So that's Jimmy U and Zarafa. And then we have our two younger animals in our herd. Their name's Keto, she's 8 now, and Obi, who's 4. And they're a mother and son duo that we got when we opened our new facility, also from Dubbo, from Taronga Western Plains. And they came to us in 2020. And we haven't bred on site at Taronga for over 30 years. So I've just missed the boat of being involved in breeding giraffe, unlike
you. You bred yourself, though.
So when we got Keto and Obi together as like a package deal sort of thing, and they actually transported together in the same float. The Dubbo keepers did an amazing job training those two. They transported together in the same float. I don't know how common that is.
I don't think it's very common.
But they did a great job and they got the animals to us safely. And it's been really cool watching that maternal bond between Keto and Ebo. They've got very different personalities. Ebo being a little young guy, he's just like full of life, gets the zoomies. Bit cheeky, needs to learn some manners, very eager as in training. And so that you know, we're very mindful when we train him that we don't want to train those, like reinforce those too eager behaviors. We want him to be a calm training animal. And then we have Keto, she's a little bit more reserved, a little bit more nervous. And even sometimes with those two, sometimes Ebo doesn't like being separated from his mum. Whether he wants to be involved in the training, or because they can see when we're training the other animals, or he wants to be with his mum.
We won't know.
We'll never know. But yeah, so they're both very different individuals, but that's our herd that we have at the moment.
I love that you said the little one has the zoomies.
Yeah,
he's fully does.
Now, obviously you're doing some great training, but you said that's something that you're getting into. How do you prioritize the schedule of the giraffe's food with interactives and training?
So we have, I'll get this one right. We have several interactives at the zoo. Like our actually section is pretty heavy with encounters as well. So we'll use they have a DFI of produce. So we have a lot of hard veg in our produce, but we also have a lot of lettuce. So we use lettuce because we'll call that medium value for our encounters. Our animals are quite reliable to come to encounters, especially our male Jimmy. Like, he's a very, very personalized male. Like, you'd almost think he was hand-raised, but he's not. So we're guaranteed he's at most encounters. And look, he's a really giant male. He's probably, and I may get corrected, but he's up there with, like, the tallest giraffes in Australasia. Like, I'd say he's in the top four at least. So he obviously dominates a lot of these encounters. So it's a manner for us of, with encounters, rationing his lettuce with others to make sure that's all shared amongst the herd. But when it comes to training, for I personally believe, again, it's a big portion of how we work them is how we train them is what behavior they get is what value food they get. So for me personally, though, when I pack their pouch, I know I want pellets in one section, produce in another, and carrots, which I know are very high value, in another section. And so, again, depending on what behavior I get presented from the animal will be right reinforcement I'll use. So for me, I like to schedule my pouches. I'm a bit anal retentive with my giraffe barn and my work routine and the way I schedule my pouches. And so I was speaking to Ren earlier today, and I was asking her, does it matter to her as much as it matters to me the way she packs her pouch? And it wasn't as much, but there still is a priority of what you put in your pouch, because with our herd, we've also done food trials. So we will know that one animal won't particularly like beetroot, where she'd prefer just carrots. Like our girl Keto that Ren mentioned earlier, she's a carrot lover, but she doesn't like them chopped up either. She likes one whole carrot that she can break into 15 pieces.
Mix them all the way.
Oh my gosh.
So cute.
But that's what she works for. So we know that if she's got a particular training session on that day, which we will schedule in the morning what animal we're wanting to prioritize for our training, we'll use whatever value we think that animal is the highest. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I was just going to circle back to what you mentioned earlier about the trust, Renee, about, you know, try not to be too anthropomorphic and about how those animals can see that trust with you guys. But obviously, by having such incredible relationships with these animals, you're able to determine what those primary reinforcers are for each individual. You're able to go into those sessions with such a way of providing successful opportunities for those animals due to that relationship that you have. So 100%. It's really cool to hear about how you sort of prioritize and schedule your food with those animals to make sure you get a successful session.
Yeah, so like the majority of their diet is lucerne, hay,
and
browse. But yeah, we do have I know like a lot of zoos are, you know, phasing out of produce, which so are we. Our nutritionist is really strict with
down.
That.
She's cracking down.
Which is fine. But yeah, so we just allocate, and then whatever we don't use in training, or if we don't have a day of training, then they go into enrichment toys and stuff like that that we use later on for our afternoon routine.
And for us too, we use a lot of not a lot. We obviously it's measured, but we use herbivore pellets, and we often use them for shifting because it's sound reactive. So for us, if we've got the herbivore pellets in a jug, then we can rattle it, and it's also a sound cue that we inadvertently put on cue, but it works, and that's what we train our younger keepers to use for shifting, because they do respond very well to the sound, obviously, of the cubes.
Yeah, that's really interesting, and you can't hear lettuce when you shake that, so
yeah, you can't hear lettuce.
I also love that you have obviously figured out that she prefers her carrots whole. Like, that sounds like such a little kid thing. Like,
it's
no,
the cutest thing.
I won't eat it chopped. Like, I want it whole.
Oh, no, she spit it out chopped. Like,
the carrot, She like puts it in her mouth lengthways and she clicks it all the way to the end. It's the cutest thing.
Oh my gosh.
Her training sessions take about 45 minutes. Yeah. She clicks every carrot. Like,
that's so cute.
Whatever works.
Yes, please send us a video of that. That would be so cute to see.
100%, we will.
Well, I guess kind of diving into a little bit more of the training that you guys do with your herd, could you maybe touch on what sort of cooperative care behaviours you have that your herd participate in?
Sure.
Yeah. So we train on a need basis, like for what we decide on what is most relevant for our animals. At the moment, our priority is hoof care with our giraffe.
It's also an ongoing. It's not just a priority. Like it's something as hoof care keepers, we're always going to be prioritizing, but we have ramped it up.
Yeah. So initially our hoof care program started many years ago, because when we received Jimmy U, him and Zarafa, they have the same dad and he had a history of having hoof issues. So we wanted to be proactive and get ahead of his any potential hoof issues that they might have in the future so we can get on top of it. And so we started training with him. And initially we were just training with foot on the block and rasping around the tips of the hoof and around the sides. But then obviously we all progress. And Jimmy and I were really, really lucky in 2019 to go to Cheyenne Mountain Zoo in Colorado to go to their giraffe care workshop.
We just do everything together.
I've heard that the giraffe is like amazing at Cheyenne Mountain Zoo.
Unbelievable.
So good. It's very well worth the trip. Definitely recommend going over there. The keepers are amazing.
It snows.
So that really ramped up our training. We really learnt the how to roll the giraffe hoof and the importance of working underneath the hoof. There's a lot more information underneath there, seeing if the heel is overgrown, because that just shifts the whole weight of the animal or the walls, all that sort of stuff. We're really proud of the work that we do with our giraffes, with our hooves, we've sort of like all four of our giraffe are trained to present their hooves. Jimmy U obviously is our star pupil, but like even Ebo, we can roll and rasp underneath his front, both his front hooves. We started working on back hooves with him the other day. Jimmy U and Zarafa roll back hooves, and we've rasped and trimmed their back hooves as well.
As any trainer would know, or like we're not any person that works with any animal plays or plays with their dog or whatever, anything that you achieve when you achieve a behavior is just so rewarding. So like Ren's just mentioning that recently with Ebo, we've been working on his back feet, and in I think 4 repetitions he got his back feet, he got the concept. I mean, we now have to keep it up, but it is mind-blowing. It's a giraffe that's like 4 meters tall, and he's got he's had the zoomies 2 minutes ago. He's come in, kick the block, he's lifted his foot up, Ren's paid him, bridge him, done. It's oh my gosh,
that's
mind blowing.
I was gonna ask quickly what your bridge, like what do you use for a bridge for your giraffes?
We're verbal.
Do you reckon?
I was gonna mention earlier before, it's sort of sidetracking from the bridge, but it's very important, I think, for us to be ourselves around our animals. Like we were talking before, as Ren was saying, I'm loud and I'm rah-rah. I can't change that. So, and it'd be odd. The worst thing is when we go to a procedure and the vets, they know not to say, Jimmy, can you keep your voice down? Because the minute I change my tone or my voice, the animal's behavior changed. They're like, why is Jimmy whispering? What's going on? There's going to be a dart coming soon. So it's best to just always be yourself. And especially, fortunately for us, we've been with our animals since they were so young that they've learned to understand our language and behavior as much as we're learning to understand theirs. I think they actually understand ours better, to be perfectly honest.
They're very good at observing.
100%, I'm sure they're training me half the time.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, no, sorry, so I got sidetracked then, but it was just like when you're mentioning the bridge, I just think, well, our bridge is verbal, and a lot of trainers will try and say to me, use a clicker, and I can see the value. I've done clicker training and whistle training, and I definitely see the value. But for me, being the person I am and losing my whistle all the time and misplacing my clicker, I'm just better to have a great, strong verbal voice. done.
Can't lose your voice.
Yeah, okay. So red. No, I can't lose my voice.
That's okay. We also obviously do separation training, working in a herd, needing to work with individual animals at certain times. Our giraffes also train to stand on scales.
Sounds like you guys are doing some great stuff, and you've obviously mentioned a lot of great training that you've already been doing. How else have you been able to better the giraffe's welfare in your care through training?
Look, in all honesty, Tess, it's mostly, most of the training we do saves the vets a GA, which is saving the zoo a lot of money. It's saving the animal a lot of stress. So most of our cooperative care training is basically husbandry, welfare orientated. So already now I can tell you the amount of, we're very fortunate at Taronga Zoo that we've got affiliation with a gentleman called Michael Fruin, and he's a master farrier. Now we've trained Jimmy Yu to accept Michael to come in and do hoof trims, and Mike does these, we're talking like every, if we're on a good roll and he's not overseas doing the Queen's horse or whatever, we're lucky we get him, he'll come and do it every 3 months. Now, technically, with an animal like Jimmy, that would be a procedure every 3 months where, look, if you ask me, I don't believe knocking out an animal every 3 months to trim their hooves is viable for their quality of life. So it's much better for us that we train. And that's why the importance of hoof care with giraffe for us is a number one priority at the moment. So that's really where we're at. Like Michael Fruin and the amount of hoof care we do and the amount of stuff. So anything we train, as Ren mentioned earlier, will be also often, not also, but we're always working towards a goal. So even if we're bringing Jimmy Yu in for his hoof care session, it depends who's training the day and if we've had a discussion about it, we'll just start touching his neck on cue. So we're almost starting to condition that behavior before we're actually going to start to train it. Does that make sense? We're getting him used to sensation on his neck, the touching. We're not training it yet. It's just something that he's enjoying this space. We're taking the opportunity. It's almost capturing the behavior. You know, Ren and I were also having a discussion tonight about training and conditioning and the variables between the two definitions. And
I think that's a really great understanding of your conditioning and preparation for a behavior that you're not necessarily training right now, but you are definitely working those like very early approximations to set yourself
money
up
in the bank.
Money in the bank.
No, that's a great way to put it. With all the incredible stuff that you're doing with the giraffe, what has been sort of like your biggest challenge with the herd?
Obviously time is a challenge, always finding enough time in the day to get the work done.
The nature of the beast, obviously they're flighty animals. They, even though they are in a zoo situation, their instinct is always to be flight or fight response. So that's something as trainers and being down around the hoof area and also just shifting and our environment, we're in a very, I don't know, if you haven't been to Taronga Zoo, you should come and pop in. Yeah. We're in a beautiful spot in the city, but we're surrounded by urban sprawl. So we've got helicopters, we've got flyers, we've got fireworks, there's a big environmental part that plays in our program as well.
Even our exhibits in the center of the zoo, and people can sort of see us training as they're walking past.
We have to tell people, get out of the garden. Get out of the garden.
Yeah, so...
Sorry, there's that voice projection. Sorry, girls.
Don't be sorry.
Even just the size of training a giraffe when you're working with their hooves, like it takes a team to train a giraffe for hoof care, like minimum 3 keepers, 1 at the head and then 2
at the feet.
And then other people to hold the other giraffes that are the non-target animals to keep them while you separate. So, it takes a lot of time and communication. Even the history of our giraffe, like just shortly, like around about the time that we were getting all excited after being in Cheyenne and learning all that amazing stuff, we actually had to move our giraffe because we'd had a new facility built for us. And so our giraffes we moved them from the old facility to a temporary place in the zoo, and then 18 months later we had to move them back. So that was also quite intensive. That took up a lot of our time, took a lot of our money out of our bank, because we were training them into an animal movement always takes a little bit out of the trust bank, because you can only train so much, especially with a giraffe.
Mind you, we're still doing hoof care and we're still doing any other training that needs to be required on the side. So, and doing our normal rounds of whatever needs to be cared for.
Yeah. So yeah, and then getting the animals used to the new facility. And in our new facility, we got this beautiful tamer built into it, which is really great. Especially like that's where we do all our weighing, and it's great for working at heights and stuff like that. But there was, when you get the tamer in place, there's, you know, for hoof work, there's a couple of blind spots on there, and the giraffe really like to see where you are at all times. So we don't really like working in that tamer. So our old boss, he actually came up with this really basic
temporary
like concertina fence that we put out, and our giraffes go in to stand in that. They're not even like, they're not restrained, they just come into this little nook. U-shaped nook that's made with a concertina fence, and that's enough of a visual barrier for them to know you're on that side, we're on this side, and they can see absolutely all of us moving around, going to their back feet, going Yeah, the vet's coming down to have a look. Everyone's within plain sight, and it's been a game changer. Like, so even if you don't have a fancy tamer in your zoo, you can make things work using very simple equipment and ideas.
Engineering.
Yeah.
Sorry, can I interrupt you there? Can you explain to our audience what a tamer is?
Oh, so a tamer, that's the, I think the Americans call it a tamer. But, a crush or a shoot or a, so an area where the one that we have is like it's a corridor that's got padded walls on it. The panels, certain panels open up so you can access the animal. You can confine the animal in there, but we don't ever do that in our training. Our animals have got free choice to leave when they want in our training sessions. This one also has different levels, so you can access a giraffe up high if you need to. But our Jimmy, he is massive, and he actually is a little bit too tall for the tamer, and so it's okay for him to go into weigh. But if we were doing things like hoof rolls and what have you, and if he doesn't like it or he panics, we didn't want him to like bump his head on the way out. So the new little raceway thingy that we've put together works a treat, and it's been literally a game changer for our training. Yeah, so another challenge, I guess, working with the hooves is probably the most dangerous part of the giraffe. So, you know, we're always very mindful not to get complacent, you know, when you just want to get that rasp, that last little bit, and...
you're about to get kicked in the head.
No, we're very mindful about... because obviously you need to be able to access the animal, but obviously being able to access the animal means that they can access you. So you always have to be really mindful about the safety aspects of working down near their hooves. So that's probably a big challenge.
But in all honesty, girls, in conclusion, I reckon that all training, no matter what you're doing, is challenging. Even if you're just training to go onto the scales, if you've got an animal that's challenging, it's challenging. But I'm sure anybody that's listening, and you girls agree, and I know you agree, Ren, it's a challenge that we all accept, because it's so rewarding in the end what we actually get from it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think
if you're on a shirt.
If you're putting that on a shirt.
I love that. And if you're challenging, then you're learning. And if you're learning, you're growing.
100%.
How good is all that linked together? It's amazing.
That's, that's why we're still doing it 25 years later.
Fully.
Oh, Tess and I will be there with you. Don't you worry. Yeah.
Oh, we might be dead then. We must be dead then.
Now, obviously, you guys are so passionate about giraffe, and you've got some amazing training under your belt, and you're passionate about giraffe conservation, particularly the GCF. Can you tell us a little bit about what the GCF is and touch on their mission and the work that they actually do?
100%. So, I'll let you. I'll give you a bit of an insight first. So we Ren and I first met the GCF about 10 years ago. Dr. Julian Fennessy came to. He's the founder of the GCF, which is the Giraffe Conservation Foundation. Before I keep using the acronym, and that's literally they're the only foundation in the whole world to dedicate their conservation efforts purely to giraffes. So to me, that was an amazing foundation for us to finally discover because, you know, Ren and I had been already in the zoo industry for like 10 years and we, you know, hadn't known there was a foundation that purely looks after giraffes. So we went and saw Julian's talk. And then again, I was a bit ignorant. I didn't realize how much trouble giraffes were actually in. So their numbers were sitting at, when we first met Julian, they were sitting at around 90,000. Fortunately, now they're at least up to 117,000. So, and that's mostly through the GCF's work. So I'm, again, fortunate enough, I've got to do a stole Ren's life and I got to do a few cool things over in Africa with the GCF on a lot of their field missions. So, for example, there's a population in Uganda and there's 1,500 really healthy population of giraffe, right, near Murchison Falls. Now, there's another population near the Ugandan border. And there was only 12 in that population. So you can almost guarantee that that population will eventually die out. So the GCF, what they've been doing is catching them from this 1,500 and then translocating them. So driving them 8.5 hours and then relocating them to the Ugandan border. And since they've been doing that, I may stand corrected with their numbers, but their numbers have grown to at least in their 40s. So that other population that would have died out eventually is starting to increase. So that's just a small snippet of what they do. From they've also discovered that we used to think there was 9 species of giraffe, subspecies of giraffe. You know, there's 4 species of giraffe, and those subspecies then fall under those 4 species. But without the DNA testing and the work that the GCF have done, no one would have really ever discovered that much. So Ren and I also, I must, again, we're giraffe lovers. We really support this foundation with our heart and soul. And I've got to give a little shout out to ourselves. I know it's I'm very proud of what we've done. In the last 10 years, Ren and I have nearly raised, and a team of people that work on our committee, we've raised nearly $100,000 for Giraffe Conservation Foundation. So that's one of my biggest achievements, knowing that, you know, when you become a keeper and often in your zoo's mission statement is, you know, support the wild and la la la. And that's something I believed in, but knowing that we're actually making a difference to healthy wild giraffe populations and conservation efforts for giraffe is just such an amazing accomplishment. And I'm sure every zookeeper should strive to actually achieve that. Apart from their training goals and everything they need to achieve within the institution, nothing is more rewarding than knowing you're actually giving back to the wild and you're going to help save a species.
Quote, wow. Jimmy. That was beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah,
Daisy, I agree. Absolutely. I was like, there's the quote. There's the quote.
Done. No, it's amazing to hear a little bit more about that. And honestly, it's really refreshing to hear a bit of a successful conservation story as well. And it's great to know that those numbers are gradually increasing. And
yes.
Huge congratulations. You guys should be insanely proud of what you've been able to achieve through funding. And I saw recently.
Daisy, we really are.
yeah, and I saw recently you guys posted about that fund. Was it?
I recommend everyone to do a bit of fundraising. It's so much fun, and it's such team building for your team. And it's just, you know, and when you actually, again, it's sort of like training. When you see that money, literally money in the bank, it's so much fun.
And you've been able to raise that money. I think you posted not that long ago about a fundraiser that you did. Is that through sort of like a community fundraising that you're doing down where you are?
That's something that myself and Ren, we choose to do for the GCF. So that's something we just get other zoos to jump on board and support us. And that's an initiative that her and I have started. And that's it. I think we're up to, that was our 4th major fundraiser. So we do a lot of little ones in between because World Giraffe Day.
Our fundraising sort of started with World Giraffe Day. GCF started World Giraffe Day, which is the 21st of June. In the Northern Hemisphere, that's the longest day of the year for the tallest animal. But
Australia's
the opposite way around. But that's why that date is significant for giraffe. And so, we sort of like started doing little fundraisers to highlight the the importance of conserving giraffe on that day, and then just sort of.
And then I like parties, so I took it to the next level. I like parties, so I took it to the next level.
No, it's brilliant and so incredible what you guys are doing, and obviously so passionate, and that's relaying through all of the work that you're doing as well. What is maybe one thing though that you could possibly share to help people understand a little bit more about the role that giraffes are playing in our ecosystems?
Where do we start? Like, firstly, I want to say a lot of people would never think, especially guests, you know, we all work in zoos. We know what the guests can be like. And a major question you always get asked is, what's that animal's purpose? Well, everything has a purpose. And if when you open this question up, Daisy, giraffe have a lot of purposes. You know, they're pollinators. So they go around to the knob-thorned acacia trees. And as they're foraging in the trees, which is so high up, they go around and forage in another tree and they run pollen on their face and then they pollinate. So they help pollinate Africa. They're seed spreaders. So they also eat the seeds. So you take giraffe out of the equation, you're going to lose half of Africa's habitat.
Basically natural gardeners, our giraffe. They prune the trees, help keep the plants healthy and regrowing, opening up spaces for new plants to grow, and, you know, for all the herbivores out there, that's a really important.
That's a great way to put it. They're nature's gardeners.
We need them.
I love that.
That'd be a very sad world without giraffe. They're like one of the most iconic, like they're on everything. Every kid knows a giraffe is probably one of their first animals that they learn as a baby. I know my poor children, I brainwashed them a little bit with giraffe. But yeah, so
one of them's named Giraffe.
No, he's no, he's not. But anyway, so giraffe play a really important role. And like I said, the fact that they've just recently discovered that there's actually four species, not just one. Like, you think we'd know so much about this big giant spotty creature out in the savannah. We still actually really need to learn a lot more. And a lot of people don't actually realize that they're struggling. You know, they coined the phrase the silent extinction of these animals, because the fact that not many people realize that their numbers have suffered.
Like I said, we didn't realize as badly until we spoke to Dr. Fennessy and he really unfolded it to me. You know, and I was a giraffe keeper for 10 years before I realized how much trouble they were in. But once you realize how much trouble any of the species that you care for is, and you can't help but want to help do everything you can to help look after them.
Well, their IUCN listing is not endangered. It's not, but now that they have discovered that the population is divided into four unevenly spaced out species, some of those species are critically endangered. It's through the work of GCF that is able to be highlighted to the rest of the world.
And you guys have taught me something and learned something new every day. I did not know there were four species and I did not know there were pollinators. So that's why we're
always
podcast. You're always learning.
They say, now, Tess, if you learn one thing a day, it's been a good day, Bob.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we love to finish off our episodes with a couple of questions from our listeners. And we mentioned before we started that we suspect that they were sent by, actually, we know that they were sent by giraffe keepers. Let's get into that. Number one, are there specific behaviors you focus on for geriatric giraffes?
Look at us both. Like I mentioned earlier, all our training will lead up to something eventually. So the main, obviously, behaviors we'll train for bloods will be a behavior. Eventually, we will like all our animals to train blood, not just for when they're old, but for even to help with the blood plasma bank and the giraffe plasma bank. There's so many values you can get from blood. So every day we will lead up to trying to train for the long term. But now you can step in a minute and let them know why.
So obviously we've got two geriatric, almost geriatric animals, you would say, in our herd. In the wild, giraffes live to their, you know, early 20s, I guess. So Jimmy and Zarafa being 18 and 20. We at Taronga, we are really proud that our animals live long and they're well looked after. But once they start to reach past their natural longevity, we start doing aged animal assessments. Through those aged animal assessments, we will be able to gather what behavior we need to focus on. Our guys have only just had their first ones, and they're doing fine.
They got a good rating.
But you know, the things that will come in handy are definitely bloods, dental X-rays, and we have sort of started touching on, like you said, literally touching on, you know, the tactile of the neck.
Joint X-rays.
We've already have X-rayed their joints before, because it sort of like feeds off our foot or hoof training, because they're presenting on a block. We just change out the block that they present on and desensitize them to, you know, X-ray machines and cables and extra people and all of that sort of stuff. But yeah, I think for the geriatric animals, personally, I think obviously being able to weigh them to monitor their weight, blood draws and dental X-rays are probably the most prioritized things that we would be looking at in the future with our guys.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got an incredible preventative medical care program to allow those geriatric animals to live as long and healthy lives as they can whilst in your care, which is awesome. And that's what you kind of want out of any training program where you're focusing on cooperative care behaviors.
Yeah, 100%.
Now, the last question we got, I'm going to make it a little bit harder for you guys, because the question was, what has been your most valuable behavior you've trained, but you're not allowed to say anything to do with feet?
No.
Okay, good.
Word.
I was like, I bet they're going to say something about hoops.
Nah, no, not at all.
Oh, I'm excited then. Okay, go ahead. Ignore that.
We both agree that your most valuable behavior is station training. It's as basic as it is. It allows us to be able to separate our animals off.
We couldn't do anything.
We couldn't do anything without our station training. So all of our, you know, giraffes can see certain shades of color and decipher different shapes, and they know that we, and I don't want to sound anthropomorphic, but when you present that station, they all look at us, and the one that is whose turn it is, you can see their little face light up and go, oh, that's me, and they turn around. And like, obviously we have, at that point in time, we have a keeper who's holding the non-target animals, but the non-target animals will stay with that with that keeper, and the one that who's been shown the station block will definitely come over straight away. So they definitely have station recognition, 100%.
100%. Another value in station recognition is, I'll give you an example. When I very first started, the vets would give us, we would give them a total of what we, but we didn't weigh them back then either. We'd give them a total of what we thought their giraffe weight was, rough an estimate. They'd give us a pack of worming tablets, and we would give them to the giraffe equally or spread it out through their pellets. I can almost guarantee that one giraffe loved those worming pellets and would eat every single worming pellet, and the others probably didn't get them. Having our animal station trained now, we can call each animal to its station and go, here you go, here's your worming. And we know that each animal is getting the correct dose. Yeah, like it really, station training is a game changer. Like, and we know other facilities that don't station train, and I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they can separate and how they, again, like, remember I said, I'm very, and retentive. I like everything. I like them to know it's your turn to come to training. Again, it's your choice not to, but if I want you to come, I'd like you to come. Whereas, it's station training.
So the station, it is used. I know you don't want us to mention the feet, but we have used that. You can use that station or a target, however you want to call it, to shape other behaviors. So getting them to move forward, kick the block, then they lift their foot, you know. So I honestly think that the station is the best
tool
that we have in our pouch.
I want to put a disclaimer out there, but we also use our station as a target. I want to put that out there. If anyone ever watches one of Ren and I's training sessions on whatever, we might send you a video, or you watch my Instagram, whatever, you'll see that we do use the station as a target. But our animals, like I said, have been with Ren and I for so long. They know our language. They know what we've actually trained. As long as we're aware of, as trainers, that we've paired the station and the target as the same tool, then that's, I believe that's fine. Whereas I just don't want anyone to watch and go, but hang on, they're using a station and a target as the same thing. I know that they're two different things, but for us, and especially with the nature of the beast and how much stuff we're carrying in our pouches, and we need to, that was just...
One less thing we had to carry,
yeah, and it works the same, and they work with that, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's awesome to hear. And like you said, sometimes it can be the most basic behaviours that are the most valuable and really set other things up to succeed, like being able to separate 100%. Them and provide medical care for them as well. So it's really cool to hear. You guys, I feel like we could honestly probably talk to you for hours. This has been so much fun. And not only have I thoroughly enjoyed hearing about the incredible training you're doing with the giraffes, it's so nice to hear about the conservation work and learn a little bit more about the role that the giraffes are playing in our ecosystems. And again, another hats off to all the work and awareness that you're bringing to the species, because it's definitely needed and you're doing a great job. And I am so sad that I've never
Thank you, Daisy.
Taronga Zoo, thank but it is Tess. On my bucket list to come down, so I will be down there.
Well, you know you've got tickets. You just give us an email. You've got tickets now, David.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you guys so much again. We're really grateful for your time today.
Our pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Wow, that was so interesting. I really enjoyed listening to a couple of keepers give us a bit of an insight into the world of ungulates. We get a lot of requests for ungulate episodes, so hopefully we tick that box. What did you think, Daisy?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Great episode. Huge thanks to Jimmy and Renee and, of course, Taronga Zoo for chatting with us and spending their time with us this evening. We really hope that you guys enjoyed it. But we will be back in your ears with a brand new episode next week.
See you next week. Bye.